And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our good friends at Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. There we go. Good talking, Bart. A 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. It is episode 269 of the Massive Report, and we're proud to be talking this week with Patrick Murphy. Smurf, how you doing, sir?
I'm just dandy. Happy to be here.
You just sound thrilled, like you're just overjoyed to be here talking crew soccer.
Yep.
Oh boy, we're giving the people what they want already. We've got Ralph Schudel too. Ralph, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Got a lot of travel under my belt already this week, and the week's not over yet. So we're going to Cleveland tomorrow. We're heading on international duty tomorrow.
Ooh, up to Cleveburg. Well, always a good trip. What's taking me up there?
United States women's national team against China at the Factory of Sadness. So we'll see if there's actually a win inside of First Energy Stadium for 2018.
Yeah, that would be one more than they had in all of 2017 in that stadium. Also, Alex Stanek with us. Alex, how are you, sir?
Well, I thought that U.S. Soccer Federation was the Factory of Sadness, so apparently I'm getting my terms mixed up now. Yeah, that should be fun, I guess, Ralph. Hopefully they won't disappoint like the men do on a routine basis. But now that Stefan and Trapp are there, turning the ship around. So, sunshine and rainbows headed our way, guys. World Cup champions in whenever the next World Cup is. Where is it? It's in
Qatar.
Qatar, right? Yeah.
It can't actually really be in Qatar, right?
Like, it's going to be.
Seth
Blatter already got paid, man. No takey backsies or whatever they say, right? So they're stuck with that. That's going to be like 120 degree weather. How are Stefan and Trapp going to train for that? You know, Will Trapp is going to be the captain of that team. Is he going to have to go to Death Valley for like a month before the tournament and, you know, kick soccer ball around with Zach in the middle of the desert or something? I mean, how do you train for 120 degree weather? I don't even know.
Is Bear Grylls still doing things? Like, can we get him on like Survivor Man and get him ready for like extreme conditions?
Bear Grylls
still doing things, and he takes celebrities with him now.
There you go, Zach Stefan, Will Trapp.
That's a pretty good grift.
I don't even know where you go in North America to try to recreate conditions like that. Like, genuinely speaking, I don't know how the U.S. is going to train for that tournament. But, you know, we've got this other one to worry about first, so we'll see how that goes. I don't care about the World Cup this year, although I have finally picked my team, and it's Nigeria. So
not bad.
Let's go Super Eagles.
Obafemi Martins, not because he played for Seattle Sounders. Not to be confused, because he did play for Seattle Sounders, but he's also a former Newcastle United great, as everyone knows.
They were, you know, a fun team to follow. If you watch the African Cup of Nations, they're always entertaining. And there's an AC Milan player who's in and out of the team. He did not make the World Cup squad, but hopefully next time. He's still a young kid.
And their kits are fire.
Yeah, they're fire. The youth teams are always talented, and we'll see how they do. But that's my team. But
I think
don't
he
care
said
about the World
kits,
Cup.
As in like the jerseys. Were you trying to talk like, you know, British style?
Like
for jerseys
the old country.
Oh, the shirts, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're very popular this year. The home shirt is sold out everywhere. It's become like a fashion thing. And so you cannot get that anywhere. The away shirts, I haven't been able to find an away shirt. I was going to get one. I don't like the home shirt, but I think I'm out of luck.
Well, speaking of out of luck, Columbus Crew, or you could at least say in their first game last week, we've got a couple games to cover, but we'll start off with that loss to the Chicago Fire in the U.S. Open Cup, and it looked like a case of, you know, kind of Logan Koetter running out of luck as that game went to penalties. Patrick, I'll let you kind of lead off and sort of recap it. A pretty an exciting game, a big test for a young Crew team that was playing against a Chicago team that looked very much like they were trying to, you know, taking this U.S. Open Cup seriously. You saw a lot of starters in the lineup, and maybe because they've done so poorly so far this season, you know, the team there wanted to make some noise in the U.S. Open Cup because you saw a lot of, you know, a lot of young Crew players, inexperienced guys, cutting their teeth against, speaking of the World Cup, Bastian Schweinsteiger, a former World Cup champion among them.
Yeah, the Fire certainly were the more aggressive in terms of the lineups of the two teams. You know, starting guys like Nikolic, Campos, Johnson, Solonak up top. Tony Chani got a start in Mapfre Stadium, which was good to see. So they came out with a pretty offensive-minded lineup, whereas the Crew went almost exclusively reserves. The only exception really would be Nico Hansen and Christian Martinez. Obviously, Christian Martinez was in the middle of his two-game suspension for that inexplicable slap during the Sporting Kansas City game. But he's obviously played a good amount this year. Nico Hansen started the game before. So those were the only two guys. But you know, it was nice to see the reserve team, a lot of young guys get a run out. First time we've seen Logan Koetter in goal. Gaston Saro played by far the most minutes he's played in a while. Hector Jimenez gets to captain the team. But in the second half, I think it, you know, after it was 1-1 for a good chunk of the game, Franco Panovic went to his bench and elected to bring in a guy like Bastian Schweinsteiger and Dax McCarty, as opposed to the Crew, who brought in, you know, the likes of Lalas Abubakar and you know, guys like that you know, they weren't going to push their luck with Federico Higuain, who was on the bench, Yassi Zardes, who was on the bench, especially with another game coming up. Chicago took the lead in the first overtime. Columbus responds. Actually, I guess it was second overtime. Columbus responds in the second overtime with an Adam John goal. 2-2 it ends, and you go to penalty kicks.
Called by GCG bag, I do want to point out.
All right. I'm just going to read the penalty kicks, if I can find them on here. Maybe they don't have them. Thank you, MLS app. Well, goal, saved. And that last one was Logan Koetter's save. So yes, if you're doing the math at home, that is 11 penalty kicks for each team. It ended 10-9. Chicago won on that final penalty kick save from Richard Sanchez, who saves Logan Koetter after he was able to score on Logan Koetter. And the way that the team looked at this was, as Greg very clearly put it to me, it was not a loss. It was technically goes down as a draw, and they lose in the shootout, or don't lose. I don't really know how you put that, but I was corrected that it was not a loss. And but they were pretty optimistic after the game. Obviously disappointed to not advance in the Open Cup. They certainly had their chances, you know. But the fact that this team was able to come out and, you know, go against what was largely a Chicago first team for much of the game and still, you know, force overtime and then even tie the game again in overtime and go to that shootout. They were saying it was a positive. It's a good step for their depth. And while they're disappointed to not move on, not have a chance for these guys to play more minutes in the Open Cup, they liked what they saw from a lot of these guys, especially the young kids.
Sanchez, Bush League or not, the little stunt he pulled on Logan Ketter, who I will point out did look like, I mean, just from his body language and watching him throughout the penalties, not just his kind of decisions and you know, what side to dive or anything, but just as he watched, he did seem a little bit intimidated or not, you know, wasn't seem to be exuding much confidence. And, you know, on the other side, you've got Sanchez, who's giving up just as many goals as Ketterer had, but he had that little bit of arrogance and noticed when he scored his goal against Logan, he went and held the ball and, you know, acted like he was going to give it to Ketterer, then held it and made Ketterer walk up and kind of, you know, little petty things to do, but at the same time, a thing that may have thrown off a young goalkeeper who's under probably the most pressure he's been in, certainly as a professional.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, and I think it's fair to point out that, you know, this was Logan's first game. The last game he played was in college, and he got a red card, I believe, if I read the stats correctly last week. I've been meaning to bring that up to him, but didn't feel like after the game was the right time to do it. But, you know, so he's played in scrimmages and whatnot, but obviously nothing like this. And yeah, so you have a veteran goalkeeper, you know, kind of show you up a little bit there after he makes his penalty kick on you. And, you know, I think Logan was a little rattled. I thought his performance in general was pretty good. Two big saves. Maybe could have done a little bit better on the second Chicago goal with a cross coming from that his right-hand side that he came out for and left the goal open. But, yeah, a little Bush League, little gamesmanship by the veteran goalkeeper.
Certainly. What did everyone else? What were the thoughts on Ketterer, a young goalkeeper, obviously that's been valued enough by this team to be kept around? Just in as the guys they've added with Kempin, with the draft pick last year, but he keeps playing his way in. And another, you know, one of those players that these young players that you get to see trot out in these games, which is always a treat.
Well, and I think we have such a pipeline for young talent under Berhalter that it is really important to get them minutes. It's unfortunate that, again, we kind of were unable to go on a longer run. I can't remember the last time that we really went on a longer run. I guess, I mean, if you count the, what was it, 2014 when we beat the Rowdies? Was that 2014, 2015,
yeah,
something like that?
Maybe, I think 14.
Maybe that was the last time that we went a little bit deep into the competition. But I mean, this is just one of those things where it's not the priority. It's just not for Berhalter. It's not for the fans. So if you can make a run at it, you know, great. If not, okay. No, it's not ideal, but not the worst thing ever. I thought it was good that they got those minutes. I also think going as deep into penalties as they did, you know, no one's going to be upset at Ketterer. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many variables in the 10 kicks that comes before his penalty miss that, you know, it really doesn't matter. So the pressure was off all those guys. Nobody ends feeling, you know, that they didn't do enough or anything like that. I think Ketterer is potentially a keeper who can help us down the road as time goes on, and hopefully he will continue to get minutes here and there. I think he's pretty talented, although sometimes when he you know, tries to go out and grab the ball, there's a little bit of uncertainty, I think, mm-hmm. From him, and his composure still might need a little bit of work. But positioning, I thought he was doing pretty well, and I watch him quite a bit in warm-ups as well. I try to get into the stadium in Nordeca about 30 minutes, 45 minutes before kickoff, and so I get to see the keepers warm up, and he always looks pretty sharp. He's certainly not a starting caliber yet, but someone for the future perhaps, and glad that they were able to go out there, get some minutes, and end of the day, you know, who cares?
Another, you know, young player, obviously he's been getting more minutes for this team, but one that we had some questions about after his, you know, meltdown, more or less, in the last game is Christian Martinez. And to see him come in, he scores that opening goal, as you mentioned, Patrick, a good you know, a good opportunistic goal and, you know, and good finish on his end, his part. And I wonder if we've seen, do we think perhaps a kind of, I don't want to say a turning point for him, but, you know, a good lesson learned for him and certainly an encouraging bounce back reaction and performance.
I hope so. You know, Christian's shown more and more flashes this year of what he can do. He provides a spark with his ability on the ball and whatnot that a lot of the other wingers either don't have or possess it in a little bit different way, just with his speed and just the way he can battle with guys. You know, the message, I think, was pretty clear to Christian that kind of behavior won't be tolerated. Greg was very clear that, you know, that's not really who he is. You know, he's fiery, but he's never seen him do anything like that. And so, you know, I think he got the message. You know, he talked after the game about how, you know, it's he wanted to put that behind him and how, you know, it's unfortunate that he couldn't help the team in these two MLS games, but, you know, he looked at the Open Cup as an opportunity and whatnot. So, you know, the goal that he scored, a really nice goal, a good ball from Nico Hansen as well. And, you know, you just see that they're definitely, you know, flashes from these young wingers. Now it's just about getting that more consistently from them. And that's just going to come with time. I mean, you hope that on a given day when you put them on the field that they, you know, come through for you. But, you know, I like what I've seen from Christian. And, you know, I wasn't singing his praises before this season and even early on in the season. But, yeah, I think, you know, now that he's served his two-game suspension, I think that's kind of in the past now, and, you know, he'll be a part of the team just as he was before.
Certainly a positive bounce-back performance from Christian Martinez. You see some other good player, you know, some other young players who got in, and you alluded to that, of course. We need to point out, because of the dual amount of criticism that he does receive on this program, Adam John did score a goal. And you look at, you know, that's what you're looking for, a desperation play perhaps late in stoppage time or extra time, but he's able to win that ball in the air and head it in and get Columbus two penalties. One here, more of our thoughts here on Adam John is that, because what we did see last year, rather in 2014 or 2016, sorry, when he was first acquired, you know, there's a reason that they re-signed him before last year, and that's because he scored, you know, those goals in a short amount of time. Was very productive in that short span, and I'm wondering if we think maybe, you know, this goal, that little amount of confidence, that might help him, you know, blossom, because I think we've all been on the same page that as things stand right now, there isn't a whole lot of confidence in him if he had to be the go-to man, number nine for Columbus long-term, if heaven forbid something happened to Giassi Zardes.
I mean, I hope it's a confidence boost for him. I'm not sure that confidence is the problem. I think that the system that we play is just not a great fit for Adam John. I think he's just a little bit too small and a little bit not athletic enough for the way that they try to play with him. I think that they basically use the same style with Adam John that they used for Kai Kamara. But Kai Kamara is kind of a freak by MLS standards. I mean, he's a bigger guy. He can jump higher. He's, you know, stronger. He doesn't get pushed around as much. And Adam John seems to like the ball at his feet more than he likes it at his head anyway. But his movement off the ball is not quite as sharp as it needs to be in order to find that space. And some of that might be that he's just not getting enough time in training with the starters, and so they don't know the kind of runs that he likes to make, things like that. But Berhalter clearly sees something in him, and he's stepped up in moments when he's needed to. You know, you think back to Atlanta last year, I thought that, you know, he kind of earned his paycheck in that one moment. He's not on a heck of a lot of money. He's on a decent wage, but it's not anything crazy for a backup. But my main issue with Adam John is not him necessarily, but it's the style of play that he brings. I just think that we need a different look than what he offers. When he gets chances, he tends to finish them. He just gets so few chances because of the way he plays and the way that everyone else on the team plays that it does cause problems. Now, when you're in the Open Cup, maybe you're playing against a lower caliber of player, so maybe, you know, you can make a run that's not quite as, you know, creative, and you can still beat the defender that way. But for MLS play, going forward, things like that, I still have a lot of question marks. And I would still like to see the Crew take some of that Justin Mirren money and get another striker in, if for no other reason than to, you know, put some pressure on Adam. You know, let him fight for that second spot. I don't think anybody is going to, you know, replace Jossie Zardes. I just don't see that happening. He's, you know, on pace to be the Golden Boot winner, or at least be close to it. And so you're basically fighting for that second spot, that plan B option when you're down, or when you're, you know, fighting for a last minute goal. Adam's an interesting option in a situation like that, but I'd like to see them at least get something else. So, you know, if for no other reason than teams don't know what you're going to go with.
The one thing I did like from Adam, and we've seen him use this way before, and not that he was necessarily used this way in this game, but at times I liked his defensive work. You know, he, you know, while you think of him as a guy you bring into the game to try and help score a goal, he's also a guy that they've brought in at times when, you know, you're up one, maybe it's not completely secure, and, you know, he's able to come back and help on corner kicks, defending corner kicks and things like that. And, you know, his effort up top, you know, not letting guys out of the back. And we've seen that from Jossie Zardes, to the kind of start their pressure that they have. I liked what I saw from Adam, and obviously he ends up getting the goal, so that's good. You know, I didn't think it was a great offensive day for him, but the Crew didn't put together a ton of offensive chances in that one, just given the personnel on the field. Like Alex said, not a ton of time together. So, but I did like that part of his game, and I think that's something, you know, if you're looking to protect a lead a little bit, maybe you've already brought in your defenders from the bench, and you want to, you know, help yourself. You know, he can provide a bit of an outlet, and I think that he can also help you defensively somewhat, just with his size, with his effort, those type of things.
Certainly I'd still say a disappointing loss for Columbus, as, you know, you've touched on, Alex, and of others we've kind of alluded to. You can't force them to try to make a run in this tournament, and, you know, all things considered, and especially considering how many games they had in such a short span of days, and with the injuries and those that are, you know, had been dealing with red cards, having to miss games, that kind of stuff. It's going to be a tough game to win, especially when Chicago is putting out their big guys. But you'd like to see Columbus, I think, still take this tournament seriously or make some noise in this U.S. Open Cup, because, you know, trophies are great, and people want trophies. We want to see more trophies. Trophies are awesome. There's still, though, a chance for Columbus to make some noise and search for another trophy. The Supporters' Shield, they didn't hurt their chances over the weekend with a 1-1 draw against the New York Red Bulls, but it did feel like a game that, you know, one of those draws that kind of feels like a loss when you walk away from it. Just left you with a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, it was weird because, you know, they come off of the game last week against Toronto where you get a draw and it's the complete opposite. You know, you come back from 3-0 down. It feels like a win. You go and your reserves play what is a pretty decent game against Chicago, as we talked about. And then you come into this game, and I thought, you know, the first half was pretty solid. They created chances. You know, obviously they get the goal from Harrison Offal to Jossie Zardes in that first half. But then the start of the second half, it just, you know, New York made adjustments. You know, Greg talked about today how they went to man-on-man kind of pressuring at the top, and Columbus just didn't adjust. And, you know, New York's been good on free kicks for the entirety of Jesse Marsh's career. The goal comes from that. You know, I was just looking at it right before we started and kind of seeing the reverse angle. Not a good look for Lalas Abubakar. He just loses Alex Mule completely on that. A good ball served in, but, and then you get John Kempen, ball gets headed over him. You know, so you don't like to see that from Lawless. I do wonder if Zach's, you know, with the team and playing instead of John, if maybe he makes that save or, you know, stays on his line or comes out sooner. But yeah, just disappointing to give that goal up. And then, you know, they did get back into the game kind of as the weather started to turn and, you know, we started to get the storms rolling in, and all of a sudden they're playing against the wind. You know, they create enough chances to win this game. I think we could say that safely. You know, there was Giassi had another chance at the back post in the second half. He had a layoff to Sosa, who came in and I thought looked pretty good. You know, it's just, you know, you would have liked to either grab one and go up 2-0, you know, either late in the first half or end of the second or beginning of the second half, sorry. Or, you know, when you're pushing there late after, you know, you've unfortunately needed a goal by the opponent to wake you up, grab that at home, because, you know, in the middle of this homestand now, you're sitting on only 2 points, which I think going into it, you know, I think you at least hoped for a little bit more, especially with a pretty good Atlanta team coming in on Wednesday. What do you guys think?
You know, it's kind of funny to think about the start of the game, and I like that you mentioned the weather, Pat, because it was kind of a microcosm for how the game went. You know, you started the match out, it was hot, it was, you know, probably low 90s, upper 80s, and those guys were out there working their tails off trying to get, you know, trying to get the offense going. I thought Milton Valenzuela had a really strong game towards the beginning. I thought Harrison Offal, once again, was superb. I think that was one of the real bright spots for Crew SC. But like you said, too, it just, as the weather turned, it seemed like, you know, Jesse Marsh made great tactical adjustments in the second half. I believe he dropped to 5 in the back anytime Crew SC had possession and was going down towards the stage. But, you know, New York's defense was superb. Bradley Wright Phillips, you know, was trying to play his mind games and, you know, do his thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think you raise a great concern, Pat, is that if, you know, John Kempen is serviceable as a goalkeeper, but if Zach Steffen's in there, is the result maybe a little bit different?
Yeah, and I think, too, you ask, you know, should that be an issue, you know? Obviously, we've had games this year where we've seen games this year where, you know, Zach has given up a goal on one shot on goal or whatnot. But, you know, John, it's not like John Kempen is Logan Ketter, who's only in his second year and has made one appearance. This is a guy who's been in the league for 8-9 years now, has played a decent amount for a back, you know, a career backup goalie, you know, and has looked good at times for the Crew, I think. So, you know, disappointing to see that, you know. Ideally, you're going to have Zach Steffen the majority of the year and you don't have to worry about it. But, you know, you never know what happens if you know, God forbid, Zach picks up an injury. You know, there'll be U.S. national team call-ups, not for a while, but in September when you're probably needing some points. I think the next game is that Mexico game against – or that Mexico game on – I think it's September 11th. And so, you know, if you're pushing for points at the end of – the season, and you know, you've got John Kempen in goal, do you feel great about it? You know, and it's not fair to put this all on him. Obviously, you know, the Red Bulls made adjustments and the Crew took a while to adjust to that. So but yeah, you just don't like to see a free kick goal like that, especially as the way it happened, I think.
Certainly a disappointing performance or a disappointing result, but you alluded to it a little bit there, Ralph. And Harrison Offal, who just looks so dynamic, has looked, I mean, playing the best soccer, at least we've probably seen him play in a Columbus Crew uniform over this, you know, stretch these first 3 months. And it's pretty mind-boggling to think that assist, I believe, was his first of the season, given the service that he's provided. And then, you know, just looking at all the other just dangerous chances he's created, whether those are balls off the crossbar or the posts, or just, you know, putting those dangerous balls in dangerous areas, which he seems to do all the time.
Yeah, and I wonder partially, and I'll open it up to you guys, that, you know, for the duration that Harrison's been here, and this may be a bold statement, I don't think he's had a left back to match his ability. You know, you look at Waylon Francis was good, unfortunately hit the injury bug, never really was the same when he was when he came back. He had good runs. You know, you had Chris Clouty, who was in and out very quickly. Hernan Grana, who was a passing fad, unfortunately, you know, he looked like he had a great
back.
Well, yeah, but he was a passing fad that, you know, got homesick and left, and then came back inexplicably with FC Dallas. But then Yuka Raitala was decent, serviceable, but I don't think Crew SC within the last, what do I want to say here, 5 years has had a solid left back like Milton Valenzuela. And I wonder if, you know, the youngster is, if those two are playing off one another and that's helping kind of this offense go on and get its looks and, you know, generate these quality opportunities from inside of the 18. But Bart, you're telling me I'm wrong.
Oh, no, no. I was telling Alex Stanek that he was wrong. And we've got a chat that's going on the side. And Alex blasphemed, suggesting that Hernan Grana, the coward, is greater than King Harrison Offal, which is, I mean, if this were, you know, olden times, the feudal age, you would have to, you would be, that would be a capital offense.
Well, but it's not.
We gladly turn you in.
Yeah, but it's not. And,
burn him at the stake.
And Hernan Grana, people forget how good Hernan Grana was when he was here, I think, which is funny because this was literally like 2.5
the 3 games
see,
that he was here.
See, yeah, I think that you just way too much off of
season.
Like third of a
are you
season.
An Alvaro Rey fan too while you're at it?
Alvaro Rey never played for Columbus Crew SC.
He played one time.
Did
one
he
time.
Play?
One time.
Oh yeah, and it was TFC?
TFC or RSL, okay. RSL.
I forget who it was. Anyway, Hernan Grana was very good, had very good positioning. I think that Valenzuela is better, but I do think that Harrison does benefit from having someone on the other side simply because it's harder to take advantage of Harrison. He bombs forward and people get behind him a lot, and he has trouble kind of finding that balance, I think, sometimes between how far forward Berhalter wants him to be, but also getting back in time and covering defensively. And so sometimes I think that lets him down. But people aren't targeting him as much if there's someone on the other side who's really good. So I don't know if that's a fair statement to make necessarily about Hernan Grana, but I remember him being incredibly talented, incredibly athletic, being great defensively, maybe even better than Milton defensively.
Played seven
games. Whoa, that's sacrilege, my dude.
He was very good defensively, very, very good defensively.
Well,
in my opinion.
Let's think of this, you know, with the different pairings that Offal's had. I don't know about you guys, but I can't think of a time this season where Offal's been caught out of position where he's had to make a tremendous recovery run to stop an attack. I think most of the runs have been directly at the center backs, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
That's because he doesn't make the runs to
yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's probably because he's Milton's already in the runs. You know, the other box. But yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't remember any gross infractions of him, you know, turning the ball over and, you know, having an issue and starting the attack the other way like he did last year and the year before where he was doing that with great regularity, it seemed. But
he's been caught out sometimes. I do think you make the good point, though, that because you have a guy like Milton on the other side whose first instinct isn't to get forward and is a smart defensive player, you're not pushing as much forward, so therefore this you can kind of shift your line if you need to kind of cover for things. But, you know, I think when you play in the system, you're going to get caught forward with the fullbacks. You know, it happened to Milton in the, I believe it was the Vancouver game when they had that long ball down the outside that that Lawless headed backwards by accident. And, you know, now Lawless is pulled out to the left. Milton's trying to get back. You know, so these things happen. It's just part of the system. I do think Harrison has been very good this year. I think he's been better even defensively when asked to defend. But yeah, his offense, I'm surprised when you said that, Bart, that he's only got one assist so far this season. He's hit the post about 37 times.
Yeah.
But, that stat surprised me. I figured he would have had at least a couple by now.
He would, but it's certainly, I think, boding well for, and you get the feeling with Harrison, probably more so than, you know, anyone on crew right now, that once that first goal comes, and not that it has, because I believe doesn't he have a goal already this year? Yeah. So, but once he's like, I mean, he scored, I believe, a three or so in his first full season with the team. And then we didn't get any last year until the playoffs, but you get the feeling that he's going to be good for four or five this year. If he converts maybe a quarter of the chances he's got the rest of the way out, he's just been so dangerous for this team all season long. You look at some of the other performances, though, across the board for Columbus, and a good job of keeping a player like Bradley Wright Phillips in check, at least, as relatively as you can against them. And when you do take into account everything, this is a New York Red Bulls team, which I believe had maybe behind Atlanta, but aside from that, I believe they were averaging the most points per game coming into this matchup. You're looking at it as the fourth game in a span of 13 days. With the injuries that we've touched on, we did see Jonathan later, but, he's not there at 100%. You want that win, obviously. You want those two extra points, especially when you had a chance to leapfrog to number one in the Supporters Shield standings if you'd taken care of business. You didn't, but you could have done worse.
Well, and one quick thing about just kind of the defense in general, whether it's, we were talking about defensive mistakes from Harrison or from whoever the right left back was, things like that. Having as solid a center back pairing as we've developed now, mm-hmm. And having depth there, I think really helps, especially when you've got, Ricardo Clark or Will Trapp kind of filling in as almost like a third center back defensively. That has become a really solid unit for us. And so when you do have one of our wing backs get caught forward, which is just a byproduct of our system, it's not even a mistake on the part of the player necessarily. It's just, this is the way Berhalter likes to play. You throw guys forward, it becomes almost five in the midfield when things are going the way they should be, sometimes six in the midfield. That's kind of the way we like to play. Having that rigidity in the center of the defense means that even if someone does get behind those wing backs, they can just slide over, take care of business, go back to doing what they need to do. So we did not have that in previous seasons, and I think that was what really showed, is any time we would make a mistake, one shot on goal was usually one goal for the other team. And we still have that to a degree. I thought that New York basically had one good opportunity the whole game, and they converted it. Which is frustrating, considering that we had a million chances. But if you can limit them to one good chance per game, it doesn't necessarily matter if you're giving up all those chances. Preventing the opportunities on a really dangerous team like New York was a really big success, I think, that we had. We controlled the ball. We controlled everything in that game for the first half especially. And so I think that's a good sign. I think that's something we can continue to build on. And I think that it's something that will allow Berhalter to basically experiment a little bit more. I mean, we can take greater chances when you've got a solid center back pairing, because you're not going to leak goals all the time. You're not going to just, give up soft, easy goals on, because someone slipped. I remember, when was it that you had Will Trapp slipped?
Yeah.
And we gave up that goal. You guys remember that? I don't remember when that was. That was last season or the season before.
Every time with Michael Parker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember that, and I was like, oh, my God. The second that happened, it was one of those fluke things, but when your system can't handle a fluke thing, that's a problem. And so a guy like Harrison, now that we've got that center back pairing, he can be the kind of player he wants to be. He can bomb forward if he feels like there's a reason to bomb forward. And he's doing
better.
And he
always does.
He does. And that's why we like him. He's a character on and off the pitch. I really, really enjoy him, having him in black and gold. But yeah, it's a good thing that we have this center back pairing, and hopefully we can keep this going for a long time, because we really need that in Berhalter's system. When you don't have it, the whole thing kind of falls apart.
Well, and I think what that has allowed for is, you know, 9 games unbeaten. You know, even though, you know, granted they gave up 3 goals to Toronto the other night, but for the most part, this defense is largely to be credited for helping them go on this run. And, you know, I think you'd like to get more out of these last 2 games for sure, but, you know, you're still getting points. You know, and I think as you move towards the end of the season, those will be valuable. At home, you'd like to get 3, but, you know, you'll take what you can get, I guess. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is still, you know, the offense capitalizing on these chances. That, like you mentioned, Alex, there were plenty of them to be had in this game. They probably could have had 2 or 3 goals before New York even scores 1. So, you know, you're able to get points right now because the defense is playing well. You hope at some point that this offense gets back to kind of the free-flowing offense that mm-hmm. it was at one point in time, and that they start putting those chances away. We've seen it at points. It just hasn't happened on a consistent basis. And if they can start doing that, you know, I think this team is in a really good spot.
And I think you may have an opportunity, you know, part of that, albeit he's not necessarily the offensive catalyst for this team, he's certainly the solid, you know, the foundation for it, and Will Trapp, that deep line kind of playmaker that starts everything up. You run it through him and run it through Zach Steffen. Both of those players have been out of the lineup for the last 4 games, through the last 3 games. But Columbus managing some decent results without them, and USA with them in the lineup, managing a result that I don't think anybody saw from the final tune-up game against France. France, a team that has World Cup ambitions themselves, in a 1-1 draw on the back of another stellar performance from Zach Steffen in goal. We're used to it. Now on this stage, the rest of the world, and certainly the rest of the U.S. soccer world, is getting exposed to it. And I guess my first question is, should we be worrying? Because if Zach Steffen keeps performing like this, obviously there's still some time until they've got more friendlies coming up, but he could be playing himself out of Columbus if he continues to put up these strong performances.
I don't think Zach Steffen is long for this world in black and gold. You know, it's with great performances. I almost jokingly put out a tweet on Saturday, you know, how much will the United States lose by, especially going against the caliber of Griezmann, Giroud, Pogba, you know, insert whatever French attacker you want to. I thought
Hatem Ben Arfa.
But, you know, insert whatever French attacker. I thought, you know, the United States, you know, if they got out with a 3-0 loss or a 4-0 loss, it's like, okay, that's great. It's France. You're getting 100% effort from France. This isn't the B squad or whatnot. But to get a 1-1 tie, and to, you know, that game was playing all over the place in Europe. You know, if people are starting to wonder, you get a scout looking at this, and I'm sure Zach Steffen's already on many radars, you know, amongst the Premier League teams, you know, Bundesliga, La Liga, wherever he's going to go. He definitely raised some eyebrows with this performance, especially towards that save towards the end where he had to make that quick double save, get up and, you know, tip it away to outside for a corner for France. And it just, I hate to be the bearer of bad news and sit there and state the obvious, but I think his time is coming, and it may be this. I don't think it's a summer transfer window thing necessarily. I think it's going to be winter time. And, you know, Berhalter's been on the record as saying that he never really wants to hold a player back from accomplishing great things. And I think if Berhalter can make a great buck in selling Zach Steffen, in which he will, then the Columbus Crew legend of turning out fantastic goalkeepers is going to continue with Zach Steffen moving on somewhere.
I could definitely be worse. I agree with you. I've said a couple times on this that I think anything that you get from Zach Steph in any games beyond, you know, this year, it's just basically you're playing with house money. Because he's been that talented. But again, Will Trapp once again in the lineup as well, you know, remaining and looking to be establishing himself as the captain of the present and the future for this U.S. men's national team. And of course, all the more frustrating that result when you look at it is, you know, considering you could have had these players playing against Trinidad and Tobago and, you know, you beat Trinidad and Tobago, and it's not just a friendly. You've got a World Cup, you know, to go look forward to. Instead, we didn't. We got Bruce Arena, we got Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley, and we got what we deserved.
Yeah, and I asked these guys today kind of about, you know, the World Cup. Obviously, you want to be in it. Who knows if either of these guys would have gotten a call, but you know, the kind of silver lining of all of that is we get to see these guys play for the national team, and not just the crew players. Obviously, there's a number of young guys who are getting the opportunity. You know, now that shouldn't overshadow the fact that the U.S. should be in every World Cup, and there's no reason for that. But
they should have been getting this opportunity in the first place. Like,
you can certainly make that argument. I think. You know, I believe that Zach may have been called in to be that third goalkeeper, you know, given what he did last year in the playoffs and whatnot. You know, I don't know what a guy like, you know, Bill Hamid, if he's really the future of the U.S. So, you know, we will never know. But, yeah, I think, you know, you take a bad situation and try and see the good in it. And it's allowed for guys like this, for Tyler Adams, of the Red Bulls, of McKinney, you know, Weah, these guys that, you know, maybe we don't see for another, you know, year or so, maybe even further down the road if you know, the U.S. goes into the World Cup and puts on a decent run. So it has opened up some opportunities. I think everyone would agree that we'd rather be in the World Cup and have these opportunities come when they come. But, you know, it's nice to see the crew guys going out there and playing well. I thought Will, despite the loss in Ireland, played pretty well. Obviously, in that one, you know, Zach didn't play, but yeah, it's nice to see them, you know, getting this chance, and you know, I hope it carries on for them as we go forward. You know, with that, I think the next game is not till September, so they'll have to, you know, wait their time for the next game, but. Certainly a bright spot when you figure, you know, the World Cup is not coming here in a few days for the U.S.
It looks like we lost Bart.
Well,
so am I the host now? am I the host? What are we doing?
We've never practiced for this situation.
This is fantastic.
This is wonderful radio. Hello, everybody. All right.
Well, let's just move on.
Moving on, let's get into Save the Crew discussions. And luckily, we do have our resident Save the Crew expert, Alex Stanek, here, who has a host of information, especially a interesting question and answer sheet from council member Leslie Poole. I wanted to almost say Leslie Knope with a Parks and Rec reference, but Alex, let's go ahead and start the Save the Crew discussions here and take a visit down to Austin, Texas, and our favorite location, McCalla Place. Details surfaced late last week that there are some new bidders for this. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about that?
Yeah, so obviously Anthony Precourt is trying to buy this piece of land that's city-owned, well, kind of city-owned, that's basically been used as a parking lot for city vehicles and is not getting any sort of use at all recently. It's near the Domain. Everyone's aware of this. But other bidders have stepped forward with plans to do different things with it. So there's a group called, I think they're called Capella, that own a nearby piece of land that are seeking to turn this into kind of a mixed-use facility. They had a pretty decent bid that they put forward. It was not the one that got the most attention, however. The other bid was from a group called Whitfield and Chen, I think. And they were offering a substantial sum of money for this piece of land. They were going to kind of turn it into, again, a mixed-use facility. It was going to have apartments. It was going to have, I think, a music venue. It was going to have a number of things. And they were offering, I believe, 20-something million dollars up front. I believe it might have been $29 million up front. And then the alternative was that they were going to offer $2.2 million a year that would grow 1.5% yearly for an 80-year lease on the land.
And ooh, so, that's a lot of dough.
Yeah, so it's north of a third of $1 billion over 80 years. So you're talking a tremendous amount of money, well over $300 million over an 80-year period of time that the city can just count on getting that revenue all the time. And then you compare that to what Anthony Precourt is offering, which is $1 a year for 20 years, at which point he will have an option to extend that lease for another 20 years for another $1 a year for 20 years and continue to do that for up to 80 years. And so $80 versus $300 and I think $40 million and change. So not too shabby, not too shabby at all. And so now city officials are kind of trying to figure out what to do. Because on the one hand, you have Precourt Sports Ventures, who's basically saying, look, you guys have two meetings between now and the end of the month. If you don't give us this land by then, we're done. We're not going to, you know, move a team to Austin. You're not going to get Major League Soccer. Give us the team now or we're done. And whether or not that's true, who knows? If it gets pushed back, is MLS really going to pull the plug on everything? Are Precourt and his cronies going to go back to Columbus? I don't know. No one knows. But the city also has to weigh the fact that, hey, we can get a lot more money out of this piece of land than we thought we could earlier. And one of the most interesting aspects of all this that's happened this week is Leslie Poole has really been kind of turning the screws on Precourt Sports Ventures a little bit in some of the statements that they had made in some of their, you know, economic impact documents. So they've claimed all kinds of stuff. I'll just kind of give you guys some of the highlights here because a lot of them are pretty interesting. This analysis was done by a group called B&D Ventures, which is a group that has some ties to sports. And so that kind of gets highlighted a little bit. And they were basically asking, did B&D Ventures commit prior to providing their analysis that they would not participate in any activities related to the Austin Soccer Stadium if this proposal moves forward? Kind of saying, because, you know, if these guys are going to be getting hundreds of millions of dollars in work as a result of this analysis that they're performing as a neutral third party, well, then they're not really neutral. That's a conflict of interest. We need to know about that. They also ask about the number of stadium patrons that will be overnight visitors. This is my personal favorite. Precourt Sports Ventures claimed that 10% of the people that attend their matches in Austin, Texas will be out-of-towners who will be staying the night in Austin, Texas. And so that's over 1,200 fans per game. Which is hilarious because I don't think we've ever had that number in Columbus. And maybe for MLS Cup we did, I don't know. But they are really trying to highlight this in these questions. And they are asking, Leslie Poole is asking that Precourt Sports Ventures provide the documents stating how many fans per game stay overnight in Columbus that are from outside of Columbus currently. And that's going to be really funny because if that number is north of 10, I think everyone in Columbus is going to be like, really? We do not get away fans for the most part. So that'll be really interesting. Thursday is the date of the first city council meeting where they're going to talk about this whole stadium plan, this whole McCalla Place thing, start analyzing a lot of this and hopefully get some of these questions answered. or at least, you know, get the documents going so that they can get those questions answered before their second meeting. But it is not looking great for Precourt and his chances. You're starting to see a lot of the MLS to ATX people say, you know, they're starting to lash out a little bit at Bobby Epstein. They're starting to lash out a little bit more at Save the Crew. They're starting to lash out at various city council members who they feel are not sympathetic to their cause. So things are really not going well down there. How that impacts things in Columbus, I'm not really sure. My current take on everything is that Columbus and Austin are potentially on different kind of pathways in general with everything. I think there's a not insignificant chance that we can keep our team and that Precourt will be granted some sort of an expansion franchise in Austin so he doesn't have to move in 2019. I think the longer this thing drags out in Austin, the more likely that becomes. But who knows if he even wants to stay in Austin at this point. Their market has not really demonstrated any sort of interest in this team. You know, all their social media accounts have not really garnered the attention that you would expect them to have garnered at this stage in the process. And there are opportunities for him elsewhere. There is an opportunity for him overseas. And there is an opportunity for him in the United States, I think. So I still think the Sacramento Republic bid is one that he would be wise to consider. And there are opportunities overseas as well. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But yeah, I think that it'll be an interesting process that we're all going to go through with this. Next couple weeks are going to be very, very interesting. And hopefully we will know more next time we speak. But in general, another great week for Save the Crew. Another great week for everyone who wants to keep the team in Columbus. Another really bad week if your name happens to be Dave Greeley or Anthony Precourt. And hopefully we'll get a couple more of those in the coming weeks.
Now, Alex, you've piqued my interest, as I'm sure some of the listeners are a little curious about it too. Can you comment as to anything about the overseas opportunities?
So this is not inside knowledge necessarily, but there are opportunities overseas. I don't really want to go into it, to be honest with you. But I could see him selling his stake in the Crew and taking that money and investing as a majority or a minority owner of a team in Europe. I think that is certainly a possibility for him. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Okay. Right.
This information is not coming from anyone within Save the Crew. So this is not anything. This is just kind of sleuthing that people have done online. Well, I guess I can just say it. So the San Francisco 49ers owners recently purchased a stake in Leeds United. It was a minority stake in Leeds United. And they made that purchase assuming that, you know, this is going to make money going forward. They're not the ones running the team. They're just kind of there for the ride. But everyone knows Anthony Precourt is very connected in the San Francisco area. And Anthony Precourt is following Leeds United. So some people have speculated that perhaps one option for him would be to also join that ownership group and purchase perhaps a larger stake in Leeds United than the 10% that the San Francisco 49ers owners purchased. He could potentially even buy a controlling stake. I'm not sure what the valuation of Leeds is, but he could certainly purchase a sizable stake in that team. And some people were just kind of trolling along, looking at who was following Leeds United and noticed that. And it's something that multiple people have been keeping an eye on for a while. So I don't know if that's going to end up happening or not. I also think that would be a very good option for him. I think at this point for Anthony Precourt, anywhere he goes in Major League Soccer, fans are not going to particularly like him. This is not just a Columbus thing at this point. This is a league-wide thing. And just from, you know, conversations I've had with him, he seems to really enjoy being an owner. I'm not sure he's going to still enjoy being an owner after all this is said and done. I think he could enjoy being an owner overseas, and he could be hands off. You know, he could let them run things, and he could just cash the checks. I think that'd be a good situation for him, and maybe a good situation for us here as well. So we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, I still think in my eyes the best scenario for him is Sacramento Republic, but he has options other than in America for sure.
It's interesting you mentioned that 49ers thing, because I think, is it the DeBartlos or the Yorks? I can't imagine. I think it's still the Yorks. I'm not too sure. I'm from their original town with the 49ers, but that's neither here nor there. What is here nor there is Atlanta United's coming into town on Wednesday, guys. This is a big matchup for Crew SC with the aforementioned Supporter Shield implications that we talked about, as well as for supremacy in the Eastern Conference. This will help Crew SC ascend the rankings. Patrick Murphy, there's a lot of stuff coming out of Atlanta. They're good this year. Joseph Martinez is on a tear. Last I checked, I believe is 3 goals above Giassi Zardes in the Golden Boot race. However, their playmaker, Miguel Almiron, may be out. Do you have any information on that for Wednesday?
Not any more than really what you said there. He was dealing with an injury today at practice, it looked like, from Doug Robinson, who covers the team for the Constitution Journal. And he, I believe, called him unsure for the game on Wednesday, which would be big, you know, from both perspectives, obviously negatively for Atlanta and positively for Columbus. Almiron's a guy that's hurt the Crew in the past. He's clearly one of the nice up and coming young playmakers in this league. And, you know, if they have to come to Columbus without him, this is a team that has a very good, probably first, you know, starting lineup plus a couple, but you know, it's hard. It's going to be hard for them to replace a guy like that. Now they do have, some options, but they're young, relatively unproven, when you're comparing them now, Maroon. So, you know, if this is the case and they don't have one of their stars, like you mentioned, Martinez has been on a tear, so you still have to worry about him, and they have a number of other attacking options. But, yeah, he's kind of the guy that makes a lot of their stuff go. So if he's out, that would at least help Columbus, you know, potentially set up for getting a win on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, at least with Atlanta United, I mean, it is pretty much the Joseph Martinez show, and Almiron can hit you from outside the box. But like you said, Pat, you've got a little bit of that youth with Julian Gressel coming in. He's been doing some great things. I know the prospect Andrew Charlton is somebody, I believe that's how you say the last name.
He's been good in, I think, limited time.
He's been with Atlanta United too most of the season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, just played a little bit more recently. Obviously, they signed
Barco.
Barco. I always want to say Blanco. Barco this offseason. He was hurt at the beginning of the year, has come back and started to play more. So, you know, he's a guy, you know, $15 million, I think, was the MLS record for a teenager. And, you know, he's been pretty good. I think still kind of adjusting to this league and whatnot. But, yeah, Almiron's a big loss if they are without him. You know, that's one of the things I think with them is they're very good. Like I said, that starting 11 is very good, probably the best in the league, maybe Toronto when they're on. But once you get past that, and we saw it a little bit later last year, once they started to, you know, the games really started to pile up, they backloaded that schedule for them so they could play more games at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and, you know, some nagging injuries and things like that. And that's why, you know, they ended up playing that knockout round game against Columbus. And instead of, you know, going straight to the two-leg series in the Eastern Conference semifinals, and we obviously know what happened there. I also think we should note that with the national team games done, Will Trapp, Zach Steffen are both going to be back. Obviously, Zach Steffen was out of this world against Atlanta in that playoff game. So having him back is big. We talked to him today about that game. And he admitted that, you know, that game is... You know, he was very up for that game given what was at stake. You know, getting that emotionally excited for a regular season game is probably a little bit more difficult. There's just not necessarily that energy that comes with it. But, you know, he's excited to face Atlanta again. It's a team that's obviously hurt Columbus in the past with their offense. So likely going to test him a little bit. I also think Columbus, you know, has a chance to, we talked earlier about trying to find the back of the net. Atlanta's a team that, while they score a lot of goals, they also give up a lot of goals. You know, we're all very familiar with Michael Parkhurst, and while I think he, in his day, was a very good defender, has lost a bit of a step. I think he's been pretty good with Atlanta over the last year and a half or so, but you know, this defense isn't their focal point. It's like Columbus for a long time, that they struggle to handle things defensively because of the numbers they throw forward and whatnot. So, you know, this is a game where Columbus could figure out a way to score some goals. Obviously, I think they'll have chances. It's just a matter of putting the ball in the back of the net.
And I agree with you. I think they're very top heavy. I think they've, you know, you've got Martinez, Almiron, those players that we kind of talked about at the start of the segment, but then you get to the defense and the defense gets a little suspect. You know, you've got Parkhurst, Perez is a little out there sometimes. Garza doesn't really play to the caliber that he did when he first came in the league. And of course, you've got Brad Guzan between the sticks, and this is not the Brad Guzan of old. This is the Brad Guzan who saw Aston Villa through to relegation and also saw Middlesbrough to relegation. Alex, do you have anything that you'd like to chime in regards to Atlanta United? The old five stripes, as they call them.
A Brad Guzan sucks. That's
thanks, Alex.
The hard-hitting analysis here from that you've come to know and love from the Massive Report podcast. Well, guys, let's get our predictions in. But before we do that, we'd like to thank our friends at who's our sponsors again? Oh, yeah. The Old North Arcade. Yeah, you can find them in Clintonville. They've got video games, a dope porch. They've got some great brews there. And you can do some cool stuff there and play some video games and play Made FIFA and watch me lose. Besides that, I'm feeling bad about myself. It's a downer.
We might have to have a therapy session with Ralph, Alex.
But anyway, let's turn it around here. Patrick Murphy, you're going to be in the press box on Wednesday, hopefully. I missed you this weekend. But tell us what you expect, your predictions, and what happens.
I'm concerned about this game from a crew perspective. I think, you know, even without Almiron, and like I said, I think it's a big loss if they don't have him. You know, I don't think the defense has been tested like this. The closest thing has probably been Toronto, and they gave up 3 goals, and that wasn't even a full-strength Toronto side. You know, I do think this is an improved defense. I think likely having Jonathan Mensah back from the start will help, but, you know, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that even when Columbus does get chances, they don't put them away right now. Maybe that changes on Saturday or on Wednesday, sorry. But I'm saying a 2-1 loss for Columbus at home.
All right. Mr. Stanek, what are you feeling?
2-1 win, easy 3 points.
Do you want to go into detail?
Brad Guzan sucks.
Well, I guess I got to break the tie here or go with a tie because one of you went with a win, the other went with a loss.
We know what Bart will pick.
That's
7-0 to Columbus.
Let me channel Bart for a second. I'll tell you, you guys, I'm going to be the GCG back homer that I am. And I'm going to tell you, 7-1 Cruisers FC at the Tiny Defen Fortress. Okay, that was Bart's pick.
That's awful.
Thank you.
That was so bad.
Guys, I was thrown into this. I don't see you guys taking the lead here. But anywho, Pat, I've got to agree with you to an extent, is that, you know, you see this top-heavy offense there with Martinez, and then if Almiron can go, maybe it's a little bit of gamesmanship on behalf of the Atlanta United front office, you know, kind of like when Tom Brady can't go and his, you know, fingers hurt for 6 weeks and everybody thinks he's dead. But I like when I can audibly hear you say what. That's fantastic. But anyway, I'm going to have to go 3-1's a little excessive. Steffen's back. So I'm gonna stay with the 2-1 scoreline. I think Zach plays well, but I think our buds...
That would end his scoreless or his shutout streak, which is still intact.
Well, I think our buds at Dirty South Soccer, fellow sister SB Nation website, would love to see Zach Steffen get his. And, you know, I just... Atlanta United's first visit to Moffray Stadium went quite well for them last season. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes on Wednesday night. Fellas...
Did you say Dirty South Soccer?
Yeah, Dirty South Soccer. That's the SB Nation.
I'm changing my prediction from 2-1 to 3-1.
And Brad Guzan sucks.
Yeah, we already covered that.
Okay. Fellas, any parting shots at all or anything that you would like to add to the finale of this podcast?
No, I'm good.
Patrick?
Save the crew.
Save the crew. Speaking of that, lovely transition. STC is getting together with the Columbus Eagles this weekend for the 4 o'clock start time against Empire United.
Perfectly timed right in the middle of a World Cup game, by the way.
Right in the middle of a World Cup game. We'll have it on your phones. You can get complimentary internet from Otterbein University, and you can stream it on your phones while you're there.
You can, actually. I did that with the Cavs game.
There you go. Ha-ha. So, but yeah, 4 o'clock, Save the Crew will have a presence there. It sounds like, several supporter groups will be there. Not too sure if Patrick Murphy will be making an appearance as he did at the last home game.
You mean
but
when there were also supposed to be several supporter groups there and there were 7 total people?
That cuts deep, man. That cuts deep.
I'm just saying, don't count on these people to show up.
Well, Save the Crew will be there apparently having a, pretty
Alex,
decent...
are you going?
I may. I haven't been since the first season, but I might make an appearance. It's possible.
Just so we're clear, this is during the... Hold on.
I already said I don't care about the World Cup.
Croatia-Nigeria. Didn't you say you're a Nigeria fan?
Oh.
I also said I don't care about the World Cup. Let's go Eagles.
All right.
So get in the Eagles nest. They've got some good stuff there. Good food there as well. And word of a tailgate. So
do they
be
have good food?
They do.
I didn't eat the food when I was there.
I got the Jets pizza as a halftime snack.
Ooh, Jets pizza. I do like that.
It's pretty good. That deep crust. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Haven't had Jets in a while.
Let's get Jets.
Okay, now Ralph's singing. Let's end this.
All right. For the departed Bart Logan, who Don Garber apparently hacked his computer and cut him off. For Patrick Murphy and Alex Stanek. Guys, my name is Ralph Shadell. You have yourself a great evening. And Alex, you going to say it?
Bye, buddies.
Bye, buddies.
Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on. Really stop. Good, stop.
This
stop.
Is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We will probably put this in at the end. 3,